We're in Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Kaf Amud Bet 20b, just before Mishnah, a few lines down from the top. We looked at yesterday, no, we didn't get to the Mishnah. It was like two lines before the Mishnah. Yeah. So we said yesterday, we had a discussion about what this dargash is, type of bed that the king sits on, lies on, reclines on, while they feed him the meal for the mourners, when he's a mourning. So what is a dargash? So, final view of the Gemara is that it is a bed made of leather, and then, which explains why it wasn't turned upside down. And then we had a discussion about how it was made, and it seems to be that the difference between a dargash, whether or not it's made of leather, and the normal bed is that a normal bed, the bindings go around the top of the frame, around the outside. The dargash goes through the middle, the bindings go through the middle of the frame. That appeared to be our final conclusion of the Gemara. So now we're up to Rav Yaakov.
Why should that matter for anyone for our purposes, whether it goes through the middle or the top?
Because it's halakha. Because it's halakha that the king sits on a dargash, so Bezrat Hashem, if Malkut David comes back, we're going to have to know. We're going to have to know what he sits on, right? How do you have to make a dargash? Because that's what the Mishnah said. He's going to have to sit on one. So we have to know what it is. Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yaakov said in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Halacha Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The halacha follows Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. What did Rashbag say? Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is the one who said that differently. Said, well, what did he say? If you look further back in the Gemara, on the bottom of Kaf Amud Aleph, a couple of lines up. 4 lines up, the last word on the line. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Omer Dargash Matir Karativin Behunofel Melav. The Dargash, the law of a Dargash, is that you untie the binding and it falls by itself. Right, you don't have to turn it over. Instead of turning it over, you untie it. Right, so here the Gemara is talking about the question about whether you turn over the Dargash bed, right? If you're in mourning. So here we don't turn it over, rather we untie the bindings and let it fall. Meaning maybe that we don't use it. Maybe that when you turn a bed over, you don't use it. And you have to sleep on the floor, you have to sleep somewhere else. And that's the reason you're turning it over. But in the case of a dargash, you don't have to actually turn it over, but you still have to dismantle it, so to speak. You can't use it. You have to untie the bindings and let it fall. So the halakha follows that opinion about what you do with a dargash. Amar Rabbi Yaakov Ba'ami, Rabbi Yaakov Ben Ami says, Mita Shenakalite Yotzin. A bed that the poles protrude, Zokfin V'dayov. You turn it on its side, you stand it up, and it's enough. Right, so this is the bed that doesn't have fall. When we do the picture, we have a normal bed where normally the poles do protrude. And what they could do, they could put a canvas across the top if they wanted of the fall. But then you can turn it over on its side, on its top, and it's got four legs from the other direction. But there were some beds which weren't made like that. Right, so here's the normal bed. Normal bed has like that. You can turn it over and flip on its top. But some beds are made like this, right? They have four legs like a table, and instead of having protruding ones on each corner, they have a protruding one in the middle, right, which they would use as a canopy to put a cover.
Like mosquito netting.
Like a mosquito net. So these two here meant that you couldn't turn it on its head because it would fall over. So those ones, is the Gemara is telling us, you just stand it on its end and it's enough. And you make it unusable. That appears to be the rule, that you're making it unusable. Right? Either standing on its end, in the case of the two beds, turning on its head, or dropping the mattress out the middle, so to speak, is a dargash. In all cases, we're rendering the bed unusable for a mourner. Yeah, it doesn't matter in this case the relevant part, the relevant law is the fact it's got these two poles. Any bed that has those two poles, you can't turn it on its head.
What is the reason why you have to change the bed? Because only because you have one.
Could be. It could well be. No, it could be like, for example, on Tisha B'Av, right? Tisha B'Av is rules of mourning, right? So it's very similar. I can learn mourning from all the different places where you learn mourning. So on Tisha B'Av, we know that you don't sit on a chair, you have to sit on a low stool. But and some people also have a minhag not to sleep in their bed. To sleep on the floor, to sleep on the cushion. Nahon, but in the previous times, it could well be that that's a sign of mourning, is you don't sleep on your bed.
Space, though.
You do what?
Space.
Why?
Under you.
Why?
Because it's a bad spirit.
Okay. Don't know. But there are people who slept on the floor, I think. I'm not quite sure how it works exactly. In our current day, I haven't seen any place where anyone talks about not sleeping on the floor. Like when you go camping, for example, no one says that you shouldn't sleep on the floor. So I don't know whether or not we're about. Yeah.
It seems to be the same thing.
Yeah, so what's.
Why Equals two, only one is number.
I don't see the difference for why he's done two. And then you turn it on somewhere like that, right? Does he reference the numbers in the text?
No.
Maybe here in the Rashi. That's in the Tosfot. That's Tosfot, maybe that's talking about different.
Yeah.
Menach, Mutar, what's it going? Melech Mutar. Yeah, no, but Melech Mutar, I think, is already in the next subject, in the next Mishnah. So, also, Levi tries to keep in the same place. There are no numbers here, I think. One, two, three. Don't know if that's relevant. Call him up and ask him. What's that picture? Okay. So, that's the end of that sugya. So, that's the Mishnah. So the Mishnah just described the king in the morning. Let's just review, so it's in our heads. The king in the case of mourning, the people feed him, and he sits on a dargash, lies on a dargash, reclines on it, when he does, when you tink, and they sit on the floor. And we use that to talk about the inyan of beds during the case of mourning, generally speaking. Let's see if there's anything. Tov, there's a few Rashis, but I don't think it's going to take us. Anyway, so let's move on to the Mishnah. New Mishnah. Umotzi, and he goes out. Right, so already Umotzi, this Mishnah is going on the back of the old Mishnah. Umotzi, and. You don't start a Mishnah with the word and. Right? Obviously connected to the previous Mishnah. Maybe even in the Mishnayot it's one Mishnah, and they only split it up in the Gemara. Sometimes they do that. Mishnayot, when you list the Mishnayot, don't necessarily follow exactly the Mishnayot in the Gemara. They put them together, or they... So, Umotzi lemilchemet harishut. We're talking about the king. And he may take out for a permissible war, I mean, takes the army out for a permissible war. Al-Pi Beit Din, on the word of the Beit Din, right, he needs to get consent to the Beit Din, Shoshim Ve'echad, of 71, right? Mentioned this before, that before going out for a discretionary war, the king needs to have the permission of the big Sanhedrin of 71. The Mishnah here lists it again. There's the Gemara, he's going to ask at the beginning of the Gemara, why did you say that again? Why did you say it twice? Right, the Mishnah doesn't normally repeat itself unless there's a good reason. So here we see that law again. Uporetz la'asot lo derech v'ein memacheh b'yado. Uporetz means to make break through, to make a breach. La'asot lo derech. You're allowed to break through, to breach. For example, if fences are in the way and the army needs to go out to war that way, and that way happens to be across your field and you've got a big fence, so Mishnah tells us you're allowed to break through the fence, la'asot lo derech, to make him away, ve'ein mamacheh b'yado, and you're not allowed to protest against him. Interestingly, why you need the double lashon? I don't think it says here. I didn't see it when I first read it, but maybe we'll look at it again. Why it says here double lashon? So he's allowed to do it, and you're not allowed to protest. So double. Why do you need both? He's allowed to do it, and you're not allowed to protest. Why do you need the end, and you're not allowed to protest? If he's allowed to do it.
But for compensation.
Ah, so maybe. Well, no, it's about protesting them. It doesn't say about compensation. It might be that's what it means. Could be. You might want to say that that's what it means, so you don't get any compensation for it, but it doesn't say that.
I'm looking at the footnotes.
Okay. Do you see the question? Why? There is a question. If you're allowed to do something, you don't need to then tell me, and you're not allowed to protest. It's obvious, it's a Mishnah. It says you're allowed to do it. You don't see anywhere else where the Mishnah tells you you're allowed to do this, and you're not allowed to argue. It's obvious. Let's see if Rashi says anything on this point. Horetz, Kederot, Achirim, other fences, La'asot lo derech, L'sadehu v'lekarmo, through his field or his vineyard. No. Doesn't say anything about that. Does the 8 king goes, king does not. May break through further on. Tov, the footnote here is explaining that. What are we talking about here? So there's different opinions here in the footnote. Explains the Yadrama and the Rambam. Different opinions about what's going on here. It says that king's allowed to break through a fence. It doesn't say in what connection. There's two options. either it's talking about the context, which is going out to a war, or it's just talking generally. King's allowed to break fences. Here the Adramas says, for example, he's allowed to break a fence to get to his own land. It's in the way. My field's over there. I'm walking through. I'm the king, I can do that. He's allowed to break down fences generally. Right? The Rambam says no. Rambam says this only involves military purposes, because we're talking about the context of war, so you have a different understanding of the sugya about what it's talking about. Talking generally, or is it talking about the context that we're talking about here? Well, different ways of understanding the Mishnah. Okay, next part of the Mishnah. Derech HaMelech Ein Lo Shiur. The path of the king, Ein Lo Shiur, has no measure. Right? The king's allowed to make a path as big as he wants. And you can't say to him, look, if you want to break the fence, so break a small section and walk through. The king's allowed to make whatever measure he wants. If he decides that I want to be able to have my army walking in single file in a row that way going forward, fine, we don't have to squeeze into funnel formation to get through the gap. The king's allowed to make whatever. Obviously, a lot of these things, they all have deeper contexts as well. Like the fact that the Mishnah is telling us that the king's allowed to make a breach in a fence, and it can be whatever size he wants. There's lots more deeper ideas going on with this. It's not such a central topic in Judaism that you would devote a Mishnah and a Gemara to it. How big the hole in the wall has to be. So there's obviously deeper things going on.
Well, it has to do with the discretionary war. I mean,
no, but the fact that he's walking through a field, who cares?
What's going on now, I don't think that would be considered a discretionary war.
What's going on now? I don't even know.
The three boys.
What's the war? Where's the war?
What we need to do is lay siege. You know, a nice medieval siege.
To where?
Ramallah, Gaza.
All right.
You know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
All right. I'm voting for you as chief of staff. Let me know if you make it. Tom, so
actually, I'd prefer Negev. She does an excellent job of killing.
Nice. Tom, kapara. Okay, so the path has no shiur. V'chol ha'am bozazin v'notnin lo. All the people bozazin, bozaz, loshen of plunder. They plunder, bozazin apparently means levozez, apparently means to plunder, to take spoils of war. To take the spoils of war. And what do they do? But not limloch, and they give them to him. Right? They give them to the king. But who not tell chelek barosh? And he takes the first selection. He gets first divvies on the spoils, and then whatever's left, he gives to them. So, we're not in such a situation. Now, the army code, I'm sure, is slightly different. You're not allowed to touch nothing. I'm sure it's like court martial offence. UN doesn't like it. You're allowed to kill, you're allowed to maim, you're allowed to murder, but you're not allowed to touch anyone's goods.
No,
that's far more...
There have been army actions.
I'll advise that you should touch their iPad, whatever it is.
No, yes. But they have gone into banks in Ramallah and withdrawn money that owes
who?
The army. That was like 5 years ago.
Oh, did they? All right.
Yeah, it's like, you owe Sudan, pay up.
All right, fair enough. Tom, anyway, so that's the Mishnah.
I mean, if the police can do it, we can do it.
I'm not quite convinced of the argument, but maybe. Chalek Rirosh, Chalek Hayafeh Borer Rishon, Unotel Nechetzi. He takes the nicest bit. He chooses the nicest bit. Oh. Well, But notel micha said it could be half or just means like a portion, like either. You could probably read it either way. But although Rashi has chosen not to use the word chelek, so it might indicate half. He could have said chelek.
What is chelek?
Chelek means part, and mechatse, chetzi, usually means half. But mechatse can also just be to divide. So, like a mechitza. Mechitza doesn't necessarily go down the middle, but it does divide. Okay. Gemara. Tanina chadazimna. We've learnt it once already. Right, the Gemara says, wait a minute, we've learned this before. It's a problem. The fact that we learnt it before is a problem. I was learning yesterday doing Chazara on Makot with Rabbi Abraham. And on the first daf of Makot, the beginning, the Gemara begins with a problem. What's the problem the Gemara begins with? I know everybody remembers Makot. The first Mishnah? Yeah, the first Mishnah, the first daf. Anyway, so the Gemara has a problem over there. Let's just refresh, because it's also for that. The Gemara over there. The air comes on. Oh, wow. So I don't mind. I'm quite happy either way. Both is good for me, but. Yes, we go. Thanks so much. Apparently, anyway, so over there we said the problem with the Mishnah, one of the problems with the Mishnah is this is taught later on. The law of Edom Zoram is taught later on. What's it doing over here?
What we have here is Edom Zoram.
Where?
No, at the beginning.
At the beginning, also there was two problems. One, it said Edom, but one of the problems it says is it's taught later on. Right? So who cares if it's taught later on? Why is that an issue? So we see over here it is an issue. You're not allowed to teach the same thing twice. Right? If you see something, you come across this, and you say, wait a minute, we've learned it, or wait a minute, I'm learning it over there too. You have to ask the question, why am I learning it in two places? Right? It's not. If you're not allowed. It's the general rule. There might be a good reason. There was a good reason in both places. Why? But you have to ask the question that this is not normal. There's something I need to ask here that it shouldn't be that we're learning the same thing in two places.
Then we're not learning the same thing.
So that's one of the answers. One of the answers could be we're not learning the same thing. There's something different. One of the answers could be we are learning the same thing and there's a good reason why I need to tell you over here. Because if I didn't tell you over here, you might have thought, got it wrong. There could be other reasons why you can explain. You can have a different
There's additional
pattern.
Information or a different context. We need to know that to plug it into something else.
Could be. So there has to be an answer, but I need to know what that answer is. I can't live with simply the fact that they're taught in two different places and they're both the same, and that's good. Because it's not good. There has to be... I have to ask the question, what's going on here? So that's the Gemara over here. The Gemara says, wait a minute. Tanina chadazimna, we've already learned this once. Ein motzin... Lemilchemet Harashut. Ela Alpi Beitin Shoshim Rechad. Right, he explained what we just learned once. That's what we just learned once. And where did we learn it before? The Mishnah on the first Daf. Daf Amud Bet. Let's say over there. Did you find it?
So that's the word
on the
column halfway down on the thick line. La Milchama. That's the last word halfway down on the thick part.
Okay, but ain't much in the milchama harishut elal pibetin shoshim v'echad. Right, so that's what he just brought here. So here the Gemara brings the previous Mishnah to show you, saves you the trouble, which is very kind. Doesn't have to. Normally, it just would have said we've learned this before, and he assumes that you know the Mishnah out. But actually, the Gemara over here brought it, so that you can see we have learned it before. So what's the answer as to why? It's taught in two places. Answer: Aide the Tana Kol Milei de Melech Tana Nami Motzin the Milchemet Horoshut. Since the Tana was teaching all the laws of the king, Tana Nami Motzin the Milchemet Horoshut. He's also teaching the law about the king goes out. So you're right. It's a question that you needed to ask. It's good to flag it up. why you're teaching it in two places. But the answer here is pretty simple. It's not a deep answer. It's a very simple answer. We're teaching all the laws over here about the king, so we're teaching it again.
So it's a refresher.
It's a refresher because these are all the laws of the king. So we're keeping all the laws of the king together in one place. You're right, it was over there. So the question could be, well, why is it over there? Why don't you ask on the mission over there? You might, if you look in the Rishonim, they might ask that question. Fine, so now I understand why you're teaching it here. Why are you teaching it over there? So why are we teaching it over there? The reason why we're teaching it over there, because we went through all the laws of the different courts, the Beit Din of 3, 23 and 71, and what each one does. And when we got to 71, we said, and the great Sanhedrin is required, their consent is required before the king goes out to the war. So the reason over there is because we learned all the laws of the court system. The reason over here is because we're learning all the laws of the king. Happens to be that the same law appears in both places.
Because it's either dovetailing or else
has two facts,
two sides of the same coin.
One has the law of the king in terms of that he's how does he go out to war. And the second one is what you use a Beit Din for. He needs to go to the Beit Din. Tov, okay, that's the answer. Okay, the next part talks about. The do we have a pasuk in here? No.
Oh, does Rashi say anything?
Nope. It's not on this bit. Okay. Here we're talking about Parashat HaMelech. What does that mean? I'm going to see the Parashat HaMelech refers to the request of Israel to have a king, right? When Israel came into the land, we didn't have a king when we had Moshe and Yeshua came into Eretz Israel, and that was how it was meant to be. We had the tzaddik, but then, depending on your perushim, but the basic perush, the pshat is, Israel saw that the other nations had kings. They said, "Oh, that looks good. Let's have one. Can we have one?" So they went to Shmuel, who was the Navi, prophet of Hashem, and said to Shmuel, is it okay if we have a king? So I think Shmuel went to ask Hashem, and Hashem said, fine, give him a king. They want a king, we'll give him a king. That's why, and they had Shaul. Right? Shaul was the first king, anointed by Shmuel, on the request of the people that they wanted a king. But there's a whole discussion whether that was a good thing or a bad thing. Generally speaking, it was not considered to be a good thing to ask for a king. You don't need a king. We've got a king. We've got a king, and we've got someone who is our intermediary, the prophet, to come and tell us what the king wants. Why do you want a king down here? So, generally speaking, on Pshat, it wasn't a good thing that they asked for a king.
Mashiach, we need Mashiach, right?
It kind of splits the just my view on it. It kind of splits the leader, the control into two, right? The physical, material, Gashmir control king, and the spiritual control, which is like the Nasi, the Tzaddik, the head of the Sanhedrin, right? And you now got two leaders of Am Yisrael. Melech Moshiach is going to bring them back into one, right? Because he fulfills the kingdom of the both. But here we kind of have the split at this point, and it kind of emphasizes the difference between the Hevdel. There is a different kilo between spirituality and physicality, right? We have one leader for each, right? When really the truth is it's all one. If you keep it all as one, the whole Hashem Echad Ushmaracha, right? There's no difference between soul, what, etc. But once you split it, then your mind is now also, right? The people's directions now, well, we've got this world, and we've got the next world, we've got spirituality, we've got the market, we've got the shul.
But back then wasn't good. Like, we need
from Mashiach and now. He's not really a king per se, right? If we ask for a king of Am Yisrael, then it's just the same as having the Memshalah. There's not a lot of difference. The Memshalah is the king, for all intents and purposes. It's the same idea. It doesn't have to be spiritually connected. I mean, truth is, in if it's popular, right, like David HaMelech and Shaul, they were great tzaddikim. They weren't perfect. David maybe, but they weren't, right, but they were great tzaddikim. But it doesn't have to be that. We saw from the rest of the kings that it wasn't a qualification of a job that you had to be connected to Hashem. It was just, right? So too, we could have, we might have a very full person as head of Memshala. Be very nice. It wouldn't be ideal because it would still be control of a secular body. It wouldn't, that's its function. That's the job title, is not to be spiritual leader of the nation. But the real Melech Moshiach is spiritual leader of the nation. And he also goes out to war and collects taxes. And gives parking tickets and does all the other stuff, right? But he's also the spiritual leader, right? The Melech Moshiach.
You were saying that there's more than one parish?
Yes. So the other parishim are that it was a good thing to ask for a king. It's what we needed. It kept Am Yisrael together. It was appropriate for the time. They had a good ratzon to be led by someone who was going to teach them Torah, like all good things. So you could also say, on a good side, that they had good intention, that they wanted a leader. So, anyway, what does the Gemara have to say? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, Kol ha'amor b'parashat ha'melech. Everything that was said in Parashat HaMelech, Melech Mutar Bo, the king is able, is permitted to do. Rav Amar, Lo Nimra B'Parashat Zu, Ela Layem Aleihem. Let's just see what Parashat HaMelech is. Let's see if Rashi has here an explanation. Sefer Shmuel, B'neichem B'noteichem Yikach, right, the fact that the king's allowed to take what he likes, the fact that a king is allowed to kill who he likes, when he likes, to do what he likes, right? The king has he's basically got autonomy in many respects to act how he wants. So there's a discussion in here, the Gemara now, as to what exactly is going on with these powers given to the king. Is he actually allowed to exercise them? Or, according to Rav Amar, so Rav Yehuda says, Melech Mutaba, the king is actually allowed to, is permitted to do everything it says that king's allowed to do. Rav says, Lo Nemra Parashazu, this parasha, this section was only spoken, only said, Ela La'ayam Aleihem, to place fear upon the people, fear of the king, right, to give him Yira, so to speak, Ayem, Shneema.
No, to give fear to the people that they shouldn't want a king.
Try
to give them fear to realize that what they're asking for is really not permitted.
The Pshah I've got here is a normal tala sot, meaning he's not allowed to actually do it.
That the king's not really allowed to do it?
Yeah. So the idea, the argument here, the discussion is the king actually allowed to exercise all of these rights? And so Rabbi Yehuda says yes. And Rav says no, they're only given to him in order to place fear of him upon the people. Why? Shenema, like it says in the Pasuk, Sof tasim alecha melech. If you place a king upon yourself, Shetehei emato alecha. What's it mean, tasim alecha? Shetei emato alecha, that his fear of him shall be upon you. Right? That if you're going to have a king, you need to. The king is the representative, so to speak, in some respects, of Hashem in this world. You have to have fear, right? You have to have fear of the king. The king is a representative of that concept of Malchut. Ketanai, so that discussion between Rav Yehuda and Rav, they're two Amoraim. So the Gemara tells you, whether or not you need to know it, but obviously you do, because otherwise the Gemara wouldn't say, that Ketanai, that this is also a Tanai dispute. The same argument between Rav Yehuda and Rav is also a Tanai dispute. Ketanai, like the Tanaim. Rav Yossi Omer, Kol amor b'parasha melech, melech mutar bo, everything that's written in the parasha of the melech, the king is able to do. Rabbi Yehuda omer, Rabbi Yehuda, the different Rabbi Yehuda, this is the Rabbi Yehuda the Tana, says, lo nemra parasha zu, ela kedei la'ayem aleihem. That it wasn't written except to place the fear of the king upon them. Shne'emar, som tasim alecha melech, she'tei emato alecha. Like it says, that you should place the king upon you. What does that mean? You should place his fear upon you. Fear the king shall be upon you. Okay? That's the... Why is it brought here? Maybe because this is brought about in the section about where the king is allowed to walk all over your land, to break through your fence, and, right? Is that maybe... that's not from the Parashat of Melech, that's from the Halakha. V'chena ya Rabbi Yehuda omer. And so too Rabbi Yehuda said, Shalosh mitzvot nitztavu Yisrael b'chnisim la'aretz. Three mitzvahs were commanded to Am Yisrael when they came into the land. What were they? As follows. La'amid lahem melech, to appoint themselves a king. Right? So one of them, they were told to do it. They had an obligation to appoint a king. La'achrit zara'o shel Amalek, to eradicate the offspring of Amalek. And number three, livnot lahem beit ha-bechira, to build the beit ha-bechira, the beit ha-mikdash. Okay. Rabbi Naarai Omer, Lo Nemra Parasha Zu, Ela Keneged Tau Matan. This parasha about appointing the king was only said according to Rabbi Naarai. Who's Rabbi Naarai? So there's a Gemara that says Rabbi Naarai is actually Rabbi Meir. It's another name. Rabbi Meir's real name was Rabbi Naarai. They called him Rabbi Meir because he enlightened people with his brightness, which is interesting because the word Naarai also means the same thing. But they called him Rabbi Meir because he Meir caused people to be Meir people. But anyway, Tov, that's Rabbi Naarai. Says that this parasha was only said Keneged Tarumatan in response to their complaints. What were their complaints? Shneema, like it says, Vamata Asima Alai Melech. And if you will say, I shall place upon me a king. Right, the parasha in the Torah says it in as if it's an option. If you will say. Right, we said here that there's three commandments. One of them is to place to when you come into Eretz Yisrael that you need to put on yourselves a king. But the Rabbi Naarai is pointing out that actually the pasuk in the Torah is not a definite passage. It says Va'amarta Asima Alai Melech, and if you will say, place on me a king. Right? Hashem is saying, you don't have to, it's only if you complain and you moan and you say you want one. If you say, place on me a king, fine, so you need to have it, then that's fine. Go ahead and make yourself a king. But it's not necessarily Hashem's commandment, Hashem's wish that there's a king. It's only if you ask for it. If you complain and say you want one, so fine, you're going to have one. Okay, next. Tanya was taught in a brighter. Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Zakenim Shabador Kohagen Sha'alu. Right? The old men, the elders of the generation, Kohagen Sha'alu, they asked correctly. They actually wanted a king for good reason. The elders. Shenema, like it says in the Pasuk, Shmuel. Tanalanu Melech. l'shaftenu, give us a king to judge us. The elders saw that the people weren't strong enough to maintain their the high level of Avodat Hashem by themselves. They needed a king to give them a kick, to make sure that everyone that was falling into line, right? They saw that. So they said, we need a king. We realize we're not making it just on our own. Give us a king. Aval ame'aretz shabahem lekalkalu. But the ame'aretz amongst them, which I don't know how much percentage-wise, but one can imagine it's probably the majority, not Zakanim, but majority probably ame'aretz. So they, kalkalu, they wrecked it. They messed it up. They ruined it. Right, their request was to wreck. Why? Like it says in a different passage, Vayinu gam anachnu, and also us too, kakol ha-goyim, like the goyim. We want to be like the goyim. V'shafatu malkeinu v'yatsa lefaneinu, that will be judged. Our king will judge us, and he'll go out before us to fight our battles, etc. Right? So what do they want? So firstly, they wanted to be like all the nations. They admit to judges, fine, just like other people get judged, we too want to be like them, we'll get judged too. But, and he said, also go out and fight our wars for us. Right? We don't actually trust in Hashem, like a bitachon. We want someone to stand behind, to lead the charge, and we'll follow. That's for sure. Right?
Aren't we having the same problem now with
yes.
people saying we want to be like the other nations with the prostitutes and the gambling and the mafia? And
yeah, I'm not sure they actually say it specifically, but that might well be coffee shops. Let's stick with coffee shops. We want to have coffee shops like nations. Although,
computers,
Baruch Hashem,
computers and internet and iPhones.
They tried, yeah, that too. Yeah, but you're right. But some things are dafka more to be like the nations than others. Right? Some things, at least there's an argument that we want it because we also want to be able to use ways and stuff like that. Right? So there's at least an argument. Like, but some stuff we want to have, it's just a direct copy of the nations. Right? We want to have it because they've got it. And so,
this would be a very bad thing to say. That reaches out what we've been given certain this world is not to be like them.
Uh-huh.
To say we
right.
want to be like them is really
it's uh-huh. right. The famous Gemara that for pikuach nefesh, right, you can break any commandment apart from the three. You can break any commandment in the Torah for pikuach nefesh. Right, it's very important. However, if the goyim wear red shoelaces and you copy them, and they tell you you have to copy them, you should die for it. Should die for having not wear red shoelaces. Sometimes you would put right just to not be like the goyim. Right, it's that important to differentiate yourselves. Because if the Am Yisrael don't differentiate themselves from the goyim, then we lose our whole raison d'etre, a whole reason of being. Right, it's there's no point. No, there's no Am Yisrael if you're merged. Right, so at that stage, it is worth dying for. Anyway, so we see there two different. Rabbi Eliezer teaches that there were two different calls for a king. One was a good call by the elders. One was a bad call by the rest of the people. They just wanted to be the same as the other nations. We also want to have a team in the Mondial. Whatever. Tov, Tanya, taught in a brighter. Rabbi Yossi Omer. Shalosh mitzvot nitzavu Yisrael b'knisat ha'aretz. Right, three commandments were commanded to Am Yisrael when they came into the land. Right, like we just said, what were the three? Well, yeah, which are?
King.
Kill, get rid of Alamelech. And build a Beit Hamikdash. Your feet. Okay. So, la'amid lahem melech, la'chrit zaro shel ha'melech. Live not lehem beta bechila. Those three. Ve'eini yodea eza mehem tachila. But I don't know which one is first. says Rabbi Yossi. Kishu Omer, when it says, right, when the Pasuk says in Shmot, what's the place? Kiyad al kes ya milchama l'Hashem b'Amalek, right? Because Hashem has sworn by his throne, so to speak, that he will wage war with Amalek in every generation. Have omer, I would have said, la'amid lahem melech techila. The commandment to appoint a king comes first. Why? Because, according to the Perush here in the art school, since the Pasuk says, Kiyad al Kes Hashem, before Milchamet Amalek, Yad al Kes Hashem is an indication of kingship, to appoint a king. Although it's implicit, it's not really explicit here. But the mention of the kingship, see Rashi. Yeah. Because of the kiseh, the throne. Okay, so we see from there, I would have said that without any other indication, I would have taken remez from this pasuk and learnt out that they point the king first and then you can have a war with Amalek. Right? Don't have a war with Amalek until you have a king. And interestingly, we see that what happened with Shmuel, that Shaul was appointed king, and then he was told to go and battle Amalek and eradicate him. He didn't, because he left Agag. But we saw that's what happened. The Ein Kiseh El HaMelech, I explained it now. The Ein Kiseh El HaMelech, and the reference to Kiseh, to throne, refers only to the kingship, the king. Shenema, like it says, Vayeshev Shlomo al Kiseh Hashem LaMelech. Right? So we see that, and you know, Shlomo sat on the throne of the king, throne of Hashem as king. So we see that the throne of Hashem is a reference to the earthly king, Kiseh Hashem.
The king is first, and then Amalek is second.
According to this.
Yeah.
Right? So, Va'adayin eini yodea im livnot lahem beit habichira techila. But I don't know if the building the temple comes first, comes after. Right? Those two come together, first kingship and then Amalek. But then, what about the temple? How does that fit in? That comes after those two or before those two? Right, those two stay as a pair, one and two. But I don't, maybe. But do we build the Beit HaMikdash first and then do those things or not?
Well, didn't you already have the Mishkan and Shiloh?
Yeah, I'm not talking about the Mishkan. I'm talking about the Beit HaMikdash. There's a separate commandment to build the Beit HaMikdash. The Mishkan in Shiloh was simply the resting spot for the Mishkan that they carried around with them in the desert.
Right, but
it wasn't yet considered to be the Beit HaMikdash.
What I'm saying is that you first have a king, then he kills Amalek and wipes out everything, and then you can start building the Beit HaMikdash.
Yeah, but how do you know that? It's nice, but how do you know that?
It's just an order from the text.
What text?
No,
the king and Amalek is in the text.
Right.
But the Beit HaMikdash, so far anyway, we don't yet have an indication. We need some source to tell us where we can't. We're very unlikely. We last resort to rely on logic to say, well, get rid of Amalek first because they're just going to cause a mess if you don't get rid of them first. Right, so you don't want to have to rely on logic. You want to try and rely on the Torah to indicate to us the correct way of doing it. So let's see what.
Oh, does Rashi say anything?
Nothing. Not on this bit.
Okay.
But Adayin, okay, so I still don't know. Adayin eini yodea im livnot lehem beit habichirat techila. But I don't know whether or not that they should build the Beit HaMikdash first. Or lachrit zaro shel Amalek techila. Or maybe to kill off the offspring of Amalek first. Kishua meh, however, I learned from the pasuk, when it says in the pasuk, ve'eniach lachem mikol oyveichem, and it gives you rest from all your enemies, etc. Vayam akom asher yivchar, and the place in which you shall choose, meaning, which Hashem shall choose, sorry, Yivcha Hashem, right, which is the Beit HaMikdash. Havei omer, then I would say, Lachrit zaro shel Amalek tchila, therefore I would say, you have to kill off the generations of the seed of Amalek first, right, because that's the order in the Pasukim. V'chein v'David hu omer, and so too regarding David it says, V'ayi ki yashav Amalek David b'beito, when David sat in his house, in the palace, V'ashem eniach lo misaviv, and God gave him rest from the surrounding enemies. Ukativ, and it's then written, V'ayomer melech el Natan anavi. The king said to the prophet Natan, Re'ena anochi yoshev beit arazim, see that I dwell in a house of cedar wood, ... And Hashem doesn't yet have a house. I mean, he wants to build the Beit HaMikdash. So King David, who doesn't get to build it, but starts talking about it, doesn't start to talk about building the Beit HaMikdash until we see the passage which says that when Hashem gave him rest from all the enemies around, meaning he killed off the enemies first. So we have the answer to the question posed by Rabbi Yossi and answered by him. He gives his own question and gives his own answer, that would be the order for those three things to happen.